either one of these any good?
Wow, this is a good movie.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, well, the director from yesterday doesn't think so.
It stinks.
You're sorry. You waste all our film.
It's so bad.
Heading into St. Patrick's Day weekend, so we've got our beers in hand and we're ready to fight. Not really. Maybe slight disagreements about the movies. I don't know. We'll find out. Welcome. This is the Screening Room Podcast, and she is Hope Madden.
He's George Wolfe.
I should say official Irish citizen Hope Madden.
That's right.
That's actually true. Welcome. We are from madwolf.com, and we're going to start with an adventure racer adopting a stray dog named Arthur to join him in an epic endurance race. It's Arthur the King.
He's hurting. What do you think he went through before he met us?
Whatever it wasn't good.
How the hell did he get all the way from here to there while we were on bikes and zip lines and running and climbing?
He must have wings we don't know about.
Oh boy!
Team Broad Rail has traveled over 200 miles and they found a companion.
Daddy has a dog?
What have you done?
How's he doing?
He's been through so much.
This dog needs a vet.
I don't want you to hurt anymore.
No. He's a fighter.
Just like you. I feel
glorious. Famous dog. Looks even worse than the rest of you. Maybe you all deserve each other.
Always underestimated, aren't we, buddy?
This isn't the route on the map.
It's okay. Just follow Arthur.
Lead the way, King.
I've never seen anything like this.
Everybody knows about it. Guess what? I'm not a dog person.
Now, this is based on a true story from about 10 years ago. And unless my memory is playing tricks on me, I think I remember hearing about this story. And it's crazy. This dog just sort of came along on this endurance race. And the man that ended up adopting the dog, Michael Lindnord, wrote a book about it. And it became quite famous. And so now you've got the movie version. And Mark Wahlberg stars as Lindnord. And yeah, he's one of these, he's an adventure racer, and it's extreme. I mean, they're in other countries, and it's days long, and they get teams together, and they do a combination of, you know, trekking through the jungle, climbing, hiking, swimming, biking. I mean, this is some serious, serious business. And they have to get thousands of dollars in sponsorships and the whole deal. It's a big, big deal. So this guy had done it a few times and had flamed out, hadn't won, and put together one more team to try to get it done. And of course, they're, you know, he's all about just winning is the only thing. And so they're in Ecuador, and it's one of these, they have to meet up and they take little rests at certain points and along the route. And it's really up to you how you get from point A to point B into the next. You don't have to take the path, you just have to get there. Well, along the way, at one of these stops, this stray dog just appears, and Wahlberg gives him a meatball, gives him some food, and the next thing you know, miles down the line at the next stop, the dog has followed them.
Hey, dog. How's your mom?
I say, how do you mom for me? And they have no idea how, because it hadn't been along with them on the path, and they're looking at their map, and like, well, how did the dog? They don't know. And so the dog just becomes part of the team, And of course, this being a movie and not a documentary, they don't stick to all the facts, and they make it a little more, well, maybe a lot more dramatic than it was. But still, even at the very basics of it, that's a pretty incredible story. The dog just comes along for all these miles through all this incredible terrain. And it's really a heartwarming story, especially if you're a dog lover. And they know it, and boy, do they go for your heartstrings. I mean, over the top. It's not really well written. The writer, it's based on, of course, the guy's book, but the writer, Michael Brandt, he did years ago, worked on the screenplay for that 310 to Yuma.
Which was great.
Was very good. This is just so over the top and forced and telling you how to feel. They've got this guy, if you know who Bear Grylls is, he's one of these outdoors adventure guys. He's got a show. They never show his face, but he identifies himself through voiceover as if he's doing announcing for a play-by-play type of thing, for some sort of broadcast. And so they bring him in, and he just tells you things to tell you how to feel about things. It's very forced. It's very, there's a lot of exposition over the top, not leaving it up to you to decide how to feel about things. But so it really pushes the the manipulation meter and the dramatic tear-inducing meter. But it's, you know, it gets you, especially if you like dogs, and who doesn't really? It is an incredible story at its base. It's just not very well told. It's very TV movie of the week. Even though there are a couple sequences out in the jungle that are pretty well shot and pretty exciting and pretty tense when they're in danger. But and of course at the end you get a nice little update on what happened to them after their lives after this race and he took the dog back home. So it is sweet. And it's a nice story. It's just not that well told, especially for the big screen. But it's another one of these. I think Wahlberg now, I think he's been pretty open about the fact that he's really all about just family movies now. I wouldn't say this is a role that suits him that well, but it's a really interesting story, especially if you remember it. It's just not really cinematic as it should be for the big screen. But that is in all the theaters now and called Arthur the King. Next up is another based on true event story, Sir Nicholas Nicky Winton, a young London broker who, in the months leading up to World War II, rescued over 600 children from Nazi-occupied Czechoslovakia. It's Anthony Hopkins in One Life.
By train to safety in Britain.
Why are you doing this, Mr. Winton?
Because I may be able to do something about it. I must.
Nicky, you must know we cannot save them all. You have to forgive yourself that.
We started, sir. I have to finish it.
We cannot let these people down.
It is incredible what you achieved.
We're doing as much as we can.
You have a lot of faith in ordinary people.
Because I'm an ordinary person.
Save one life, save the world.
Forgive me, but how many children are we speaking about?
Can I ask, is there anyone in the audience tonight who owes their life to Nicholas Winton?
I may not remember when this happened, but I do remember seeing it on, you know, Twitter or something. I remember seeing clips of it, and I also can tell you that I can't make it through the trailer without bawling.
Yeah, this is a story about how they call the British Schindler, and from the synopsis you can understand why. How not only his story, but how, and what you're probably remembering is how he got recognition. He got
yes.
very public recognition. I don't want to spoil that if you don't remember, although the trailer sort of makes it clear what happened. But anyway, it's told sort of in two timelines. Anthony Hopkins plays, obviously, the older man, and he is cleaning out. He and his wife, played by Lena Olin, they're cleaning out their house to make room for children and grandchildren. And he comes across his old briefcase, his old satchel, and inside are all the many notes and papers about this network that he spearheaded back in the day, in the days before World War II, to find foster families in the UK for all these Jewish children as Hitler and the Nazis were marching across Europe. He just made it his mission. He was a young stockbroker, and he just made it his mission to try to get these kids to safety. And he really came up with this a lot. He got a lot of help, didn't do it all himself, but he spearheaded this network to get these refugees, these children, to safety. And as he comes sort of face to face with these papers and his history, he's, of course, haunted, much like Schindler's List, by the children that he couldn't save. But he starts in his old age, he starts to wonder, well, maybe some paper or some media might be interested in my story. And, oh, yes, they are. It's an incredible story. And then they do the flashbacks to him as a young man, played by Johnny Flynn, how this came to be and how the whole thing got set up and the successes and the failures. And you know, it's directed by James Hawes, who's a longtime TV director. And I will say, especially in the earlier timeline, it sort of shows, because there's nothing, you know, we've seen many of these Holocaust dramas, and there's nothing in the early timelines to really set it apart and have it its own voice of these types of stories that we've seen. It's not that there's anything really wrong with it, but nothing really sets it apart. We've seen a lot of this before. Of course, it's still a gripping story, but as you might expect, Anthony Hopkins finds a way in the later timeline to really make you feel this guy who's haunted and tortured and by his, you know, in his soul about the people, the children that he couldn't save, even in the face of people telling him, my God, you did such an incredible thing. And then when he does get his very public recognition, yeah, have the tissues handy. I'll tell you what, because they, even though it has its moments of convention, it gets you in the end. It's another incredible story. Definitely this man who lived to be 106, by the way, 106. And yes, he was knighted. As I said in my written review, this guy could have done nothing but drink whiskey and smoke cigars all day. But the good karma from what he did probably pushed him to live to be 106. But this is based on a book by his daughter about his work. And it's certainly worth knowing. My Lord, he certainly is a man that deserves this type of recognition. And the way he got it, if you aren't familiar, is very, very heart-touching. And it also reminds you a bit of the end of Schindler's List. So there's a lot to parallel with that story, of course. But it's worth seeing. It is conventional, especially with the early timeline. But the performances are good, and it's an incredible story. And, of course, it has parallels to today with refugees. We're seeing a lot of films, understandably, about refugees these days. And the good that can come from one person who just cares so much that he puts it into action. And that's always, you know, that always is relatable to any kind of situation in the world. And certainly today, you will be moved by it. Let's put it that way. And that is in theaters now, called One Life. Next up is one we've been looking forward to. Gym manager Lou falls for Jackie, a bodybuilder who is passing through town en route to a competition in Las Vegas. This is the latest from Rose Glass, called Love Lies Bleeding.
The excitement in the air is palpable. The atmosphere is electric. A celebration of history in the making.
What is this place? You're looking pretty good in there. There's some pretty serious lines going. Yeah? Why don't you want me working for your dad? Well, he's a psycho.
I saw that big girl.
That you two are maybe together.
Do you like guns?
I prefer to know my own strength.
That's not what I'm paying you for.
If you touch her, I'm gonna tell them everything you ever did.
Are you threatening me?
We gotta get out of here. Let's just keep driving.
I fucking love you, you idiot.
You'll regret this.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, fuck.
If you don't know Rose Glass, she did a horror movie that we loved, loved, loved a few years ago called Saint Maud.
Loved it so much. And just based on that, I was excited about this movie. Kristen Stewart is fascinating. She and her mullet in this story. And it's, the timeline is, it's clearly the 80s, just based on the number of mullets in the cast. But it's in some sort of a real low-rent, hard-scrabble town somewhere between Oklahoma and Vegas. And she's got a backstory, but she doesn't really want to tell you what it is. I mean, she's really, really good in this movie, as she has shown herself to be in many, many
films,
obviously.
She really has, yeah.
And then Katie O'Brien plays Jackie, and she's also very good in this movie. And it's an interesting, I mean, just what Rose Glass does with sort of objectification, sort of, you know, the gaze of the camera, with gender roles, the way she doesn't just sort of tip them over so that she just smears them all together. It's, and she still really focuses on, it's a very much of an objectifying camera that she uses. It's very sultry. Everything that goes on is very sultry. It's such a wild ride. And it's a thriller. It's kind of, you know, along the lines of like a Red Rock West or Blood Simple, or, you know, a little bit like that. You know, it's one of those kind of hillbilly noirs. And in that way, the plot twists aren't going to be like, oh, I can't believe that happened. You know what I mean? It's a little bit traditional in the way that it's plotted.
Yeah.
But that's not where she is surprising you. It's so confrontational in what it's throwing at you. Like she makes such a point of just touching stuff that's going to make you uncomfortable. And then once you've maybe acclimated, she's going to just pivot. Well, oh, you're good with that. Now let's see how this makes you feel. And all of the performances are great. Ed Harris, he's so good. Of course he is. But he's rocking
the skullet.
Oh, quite a skullet. Oh, yeah. And also Dave Franco in playing quite against type, actually. He does a really good job. And in a smaller role, Jenna Malone plays Kristen Stewart's sister. And that seems like the role she was born to play.
Yes, the both of them should always just, oh, yes, they're sisters. Yes.
It's such an odd movie. I think the final act is going to be surprising. Not in the way it's plotted exactly, but in the way it's executed. And if you did see St. Maud, you're going to be like, oh, she kind of goes a little nutty in her third act. I think that it works out. I do. I think two things. About maybe 35% of the audience is going to be like, nope. Like, no, I'm not with that. Then I think those of us who have seen both movies, you're going to be like, oh, yeah,
mm-hmm.
You can't do that for your next movie. Like, your next movie has to end without this kind of flourish. But it was fascinating. The whole movie was absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, and we said from the beginning, St. Maud, I mean, the very end of St. Maud was glorious.
That's the best word
glorious. For it. Glorious. But I hear you. Maybe the next time out, you go a little different direction.
But I do want to say, the very last shot in this movie, it's by no means a comedy. Made me laugh out loud. I laughed mm-hmm. out loud in my seat the mm-hmm. very last shot of this movie.
Interesting. And this was one that, yeah, we had been looking for and pays off and is worth it, out in theaters now, called Love Lies Bleeding. All right, let's lighten it up with a comedy next. Nebraska, 1991. Two best friends get the chance to run the swimming pool snack shack that later comes to be the perfect scenario for transgression, fun, personal discovery, and romance. It's called Snack Shack.
You bid $2,000 on the Snack Shack at the swimming pool.
Actually, we bid $3,000.
There's been a pattern with you two.
An escalation.
A very dangerous escalation.
It's open season, Olympics. You never know when, you never know where.
That's piss, ain't it?
You're unbelievable.
This is fucking epic, dude.
Just wanna have fun this summer. Feel me?
Want a little advice, homie? Make a move. Any move.
Give me a fucked up, kid.
Cool.
You're unbelievable.
Nice wheels, douchebag.
Do they have Chico sticks?
Oh, God. Did you like those?
Sure.
Oh, I couldn't stand the Chico stick. But whatever you're having, be sure to get a suicide, right? They don't do that in here where you mix all the pops together. Oh, yeah, I need
no,
a suicide.
No, that's so wrong. Just Diet Pepsi. That's all.
This is funny. This is a funny movie. And we were looking forward to this, too, because this is the latest from writer-director Adam Raymeyer. And
Dinner in America. If you haven't seen it, watch it.
That was 4 years ago. Can you believe that? 4 years ago. And that was, as you aptly said in your written review back then, like a punk rock rom-com.
Yes.
This takes out the punk rock and replaces it with some capitalistic dreams, which is kind of funny. But that's what these two best friends, AJ and Moose, they are all about the schemes. I mean, when we first meet them, they're winning at the dog track, skipping school and winning at the dog track. And then they brew their own beer. And yeah, they're just teenagers and they can't even drive yet. But their older friends say, oh, that beer's not bad. So they're thinking about, okay, we'll market this thing. We got you know, angles going on. They've got a poster of Gordon Gekko from Wall Street in their room. So this is what their head's about. And then their older friend Shane comes back home. He's kind of a local hero because of his service in Kuwait. He comes back home to manage the local pool for the summer. And he gives these kids a tip on how they can get the contract to run the poolside snack bar from the city council and take it away from these two jerks who had been running it the last few years. So they get it. They get the snack bar, the snack shack. And there's a lot of work to clean it up and get it running, but they do. and business is a booming. Things are going well, and then there's a hot new lifeguard named Brooke. And who else is going to come between two lifelong friends? But they both have their eye on Brooke. And so what's going to happen there? And are they going to get enough money? Is AJ going to get enough money to fund the Alaskan trek? He's got dreams of going away on this months-long trek with Shane to go hiking in Alaska. That's cool. And maybe impress his parents, because they are not too impressed with him at all. And they're priceless, by the way. They're played by, you'll know their faces, David Costabile and Gillian Vigman. You've seen them in a bunch of movies. They're really funny, the way they act with him and some of their home traditions of how they discipline. But anyway, so it becomes just a little microcosm of funny, foul-mouthed hilarity. I mean, this is R-rated. This, believe me, but I found it very, very funny. And then, slowly, what's nice is, even though this is basically set around one summer, these kids will do some growing up during this, in the one summer, and it's, you don't really notice it at first, but the movie is growing up with them. You know, suddenly it's not so funny. It's not so silly. It starts to take on some bigger issues about friendship and love and sex and death and some hard lessons about growing up. And it also, it just captures that feeling that other movies have done, that zest for life, just as you're getting ready to leave one phase of life behind and move on to the next one. Maybe you'll move on together, maybe you won't. It's just that, you know, that unexpected time of life. And it's sort of it reminded me of, you'll see a lot of the Way, Way Back. Obviously, it's set around a pool.
Sure.
There's also some Super Bad with
their
friends.
Absolutely.
There's some Project X with just crazy, you know, parties and money-making nuttiness. And I really enjoyed it. I laughed, and I thought it was well done. The two young actors, AJ's played by Connor Sherry. Moose is played by Gabriel LaBelle, who was basically the Steven Spielberg character in The Fablemans.
Mm-hmm.
So
the lead,
good.
Really.
Yeah, the lead.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole cast, those two are great. And the whole cast, Nick Robinson plays Shane. We've seen him in a few things. And it's a great ensemble cast. You'll notice a couple other faces that you've seen in other things. So if you don't mind the hard R, especially for language, really, that's really the only reason it gets the hard R. It's funny. It is really funny, and I think well-written. And if you happen to have seen Dinner in America, which we like so much.
Also very R.
You'll definitely want to check this out. Really a recommendation for Snack Shack, out in theaters now. Well, let's get serious again on the big screen for a thriller. When a contract killer has a rapidly evolving form of dementia, he is offered an opportunity to redeem himself by saving the life of his estranged adult son. This is Michael Keaton as star and director in Knox Goes Away.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to show up like this.
Do I know you?
Dad, please.
Miles, what happened?
This guy hurt my daughter. So I killed him. I never asked you for anything in my life. But I'm desperate.
Why does he hate you so much?
They found out what I did for a living. The police are all over this. You don't pull this off, this all goes to hell. I'm getting worse every hour. It's like a curtain coming down. I'm running out of time.
They finally caught up to you, huh?
There's no coming back from this one. It was you.
What?
You turned me in.
That's not true, Dad. You're losing it. Something's wrong with you.
John, good luck.
From what I could see, Michael Keaton had only directed one other feature film. So this is obviously number two. I had not heard, and I forget the title of the first one. But so he's back to direct and to star. The screenplay was written by Gregory Poirier, and it's an old time thriller that takes its time. It's a full 2 hours, almost a full 2 hours. It's one of those that feels like maybe they could have shaved some of it off of there and made it a little more leaner and meaner. But it's an interesting story. I was definitely caught up in it. It sort of plays two different tones, though, and for a while it feels a little disjointed, because when Michael Keaton, as it said there, he's a longtime contract killer, and he learns that he really has just weeks to live because he's diagnosed with this really aggressive form of dementia, and it's it's apparently real. I mean, they name it and they show some books upon it about it and things. I forget the name of it now. And then at the same time, his estranged adult son, played by James Marsden, shows up on his doorstep with a serious problem. A serious problem that a kind of guy like Michael Keaton's character, Knox, is, could maybe help him out. And that's all I want to say about that. But so that end of it is really hard-boiled and almost noirish. But then when the detectives come into the picture that are on the case about this murder that James Marsden is involved in, the tone early on is very different. The writing seems very, very TV movie, very generic, you know, cop drama sort of dialogue. And also there's a bit of an undertone of humor about it too, which at first doesn't really work. And one of the detectives is played by the dude who's in the funny Spectrum TV ads, who just walks quickly through the offices and says funny things. I'm like, that guy. His name's John Hugenacker. So I thought, oh, yeah, recognized him. So, and you'll also see, you'll also recognize Al Pacino and Marcia Gay Harden. Small parts, but they're there. And so it eventually, though, the cop part of it starts to get a little bit better and gel a little bit more easily with the Michael Keaton angle of it as they come more and more together and the cops think they're tracking down who's really behind this murder. And then the plan that Michael Keaton develops to get his son out of trouble in time is a clever one. What I think doesn't work is the dementia itself. I mean, it's going to remind you the way he writes things down. It's going to remind you, of course, of Memento. When memory is involved, it's hard to you know avoid those types of comparisons. But I think for the sake of the storytelling, the rate at which the dementia is progressing gets a little convenient. It seems like, because they break the movie up into week one, week two, week three, it seems like maybe it should have gotten a little bit more farther along, but that would have hurt the story and his thinking and putting things together. So that kind of hurts a little bit. But overall, I found it pretty absorbing. Could have been shorter. That probably would have helped. But a decent job, and especially if you like those old-fashioned thrillers that are just classically structured with a pretty cleverly constructed sort of payoff that you may or may not guess in time, but it still is decently satisfying. It's a decent job for Michael Keaton, both directing and starring in Knox Goes Away, which is in theaters now. And we'll stay in theaters for a comedy thriller. A teacher takes a job at an elite school and forms a strong bond with five students, a relationship that eventually takes a dangerous turn. This is called Club Zero.
Elsa, please, can you just eat something for a change?
I'm eating consciously.
I find it so important to teach our kids how to reduce their consumerism.
Hum.
She gave me the tea.
I don't know exactly what's going on here, but I think Miss Novak is manipulating our children.
I'm out.
She can't be serious. Don't you get it? It's a question of faith.
I have to rely on you. Take good care of our child.
I hereby declare you members of Club Zero.
This is from director Jessica Hausner, and it is an absurdist satire that takes aim at, I mean, among other things, actually, sort of the wellness culture. Your Gwyneth Paltrows and your whatnots. I mean, that's really what it is. She's hired Mia Wasikowska, who is so good, wickedly funny, and very deadpan in this film. She's hired to teach a nutrition class at this very upscale boarding school. And one of the things you notice first, I mean, that really first grabs you is just the aesthetic of the film. It's all these hideous colors, these hideous sort of yellows and browns and beiges. It's like every color of vomit. And also the way it's framed, so much of it is framed really at arm's length, and there's a weird distance to what you're looking at that I think works to keep you from developing too much of an emotional connection to anybody. Because honestly, this whole film could be reshot in different colors make you closer. It would be a tragedy. It would be heartbreaking. But the way that it's played is so dryly, absurdly comedic that it really, again, it just it pokes fun at this wellness culture. But at the same time, it's giving you a very clear sense of how people are so really easily brainwashed and radicalized. So there's more teeth to it than just a satire might suggest. It's limited in theaters right now. It's not the kind of comedy you're going to laugh out loud at. And it gets mean. It's throwing its daggers in a lot of different directions. Like, not very much is kind of left unscathed in this one, but I enjoyed it.
And Jessica Hausner, she co-wrote it as well. And that one is in select theaters right now, hopefully getting a wider release in the coming weeks. And it's called Club Zero. This next one is in select theaters and also on VOD. An adventure between a father and his son in a world where some humans have started mutating into other animal species. It's called The Animal Kingdom.
Si on t'attrape, c'est terminé. Tu seras tout seul. Tu comprends ça?
Brandon Thomas reviewed this one for us at madwolf.com, and there are things about it that are going to feel somewhat similar. It's obviously kind of a callback. It's a, you know, metaphorical sort of a drama about the other, about othering, about a plague, and it's also, you know, a sort of a metamorphosis drama. But what makes this one really, there are a couple things that make this one really stand apart. One is the creature design. A lot of it is very practical effects. A lot of it really blends beautifully with kind of the surroundings. It's very different. They look very different. They're unique and sort of weirdly beautiful. And then the other thing is mainly that the film is very, very invested in the performances, in the relationship between the father and the son. And that's really what makes everything work about the movie.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, any type of story like this is going to be understandably metaphorical. We've seen it in a lot of different, even the X-Men series.
Sure, yeah,
you know, at its core. But if you see in a movie like this where they're walking by a building and there's graffiti on the side of a building, no more critters. You know, no critters allowed. Well, that's going to have a lot of parallels to current life and things we're seeing today and the other, and you bring that up well. So, but even though we've seen these types of metaphors before, as long as it's well done, it can be welcome.
Yeah, and again, I think that the lead performances, a boy and his father, again, that seems very often trod territory as well, but the performances are really, really good, and the investment in character really pays off.
Yeah, and all you have to do is watch the trailer, and you can tell the creature design, it looks very good.
It does.
Very interesting, and it's the co-writer, director and co-writer is Thomas Calley, and you can check out Brandon Thomas's full review at mattwolf.com, but it is on in select theaters and on VOD right now called The Animal Kingdom. And one more, a documentary on VOD, a raw and magical journey into the life of iconic artist Frida Kahlo. Told through her own words from diaries, letters, essays, and interviews, vividly brought to life with lyrical animation inspired by her unforgettable artwork. It's called Frida.
Muchas vidas no serían suficientes para pintar todo lo que yo quisiera.
And yes, there was that one about 20 years ago starring Salma Hayek called Frida. This is not that. This is a new one, a documentary.
But it's a nice counterpoint. You could watch them back to back. Rachel Willis reviewed this one for us at madwolf.com. It's on Prime right now. If you have any interest in Frida Kahlo, you should absolutely watch it. Because one of the things that makes this so great is that it's so much of it is her voice. It's what she wrote down in her journals. It's illustrations that she scribbled in her journal. So it's artwork that you haven't gotten to see before. And then the art that you probably have gotten to see, they sometimes very cleverly bring that to life with some animation. There's also some raw footage, photos. There's so much source material in this one and very little just sort of extraneous whatnot that it really does bring together a very intimate, from her own perspective, well, appropriately enough, a self-portrait.
Yeah, and usually art and artists, that's usually something that I'm more well-versed in than you are. But you're certainly familiar with Frida Kahlo, as most people are. And it's one that, even if you're not that familiar, I think the way it's put together so visually and so intimately with her own words can be very compelling. And it's put together by some of the same filmmakers that did, well, they did RBG, the documentary, did Lucy and Desi, which I thought was very good. So definitely worth checking out. And that is on Prime and, as we said, in select theaters now. called Frida, and you can check out Rachel Willis's full review at madwolf.com. Well, the lobby is closed this week. Daniel Baldwin couldn't make it. He'll join us next week. We look forward to that for some studio news. But before we look ahead to next week, we want to say hi to Celinda.
One of our dearest, dearest friends who we know listens to the podcast every week. So we want to say we love you, Celinda.
Thank you for listening. And we look ahead to next week. It's going to be a big one. A little thing called Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is next week.
Also, Problemista with Tilda Swinton. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, that should be fun. Late Night with the Devil is out.
And another horror one called Immaculate.
And Shudder has one next week called You'll Never Find Me.
Also, Riddle of Fire.
And Coming to You is out next week as well. Remember last time, the first of this new Ghostbusters, we got McKenna Grace on the podcast, which
yes,
was awesome.
She couldn't be more charming.
She was still.
She's the dearest
one
girl.
Of my favorite interviews ever. She was fantastic. So who knows? Maybe she'll grace us again. We'll see. But we'll see the movie first, and that is next week. But that's next week. What about this week? There's a lot of different sort of things to check out this week and to talk about. So if you want to do that, Arthur the King or One Life, Love Lies Bleeding, The Snack Shack. Get some Chico sticks or whatever your snack is, or a certain kind of hot dog that they serve. I'm not going to spoil it because it's very funny. We love to keep the conversation going. You can find us on Twitter easily. We're at Mad Wolf, MaddWolf. Also on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Mad Wolf Columbus. And the main website, where you can find all the written reviews and our other horror movie only podcast called Fright Club. That's all there for you at madwolf.com. So a lot of ways to keep in touch. We hope you will. Until next time, she is Hope Madden.
He's George Wolf.
And this is the Screening Room Podcast.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
I do wish we could chat longer, but I'm having an old friend for dinner. Bye.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.